Hey, folks, welcome to Chew the Fat. It's Chef Craig Hartman. I hope you're having a great night. I'm having a great night. We have a great interview lined up for you. Remember, this is the podcast where you'll learn about your favorite chef and food personality, winemakers, whatnot. Find out really how they became successful, what drives them, really what's in their heart. And that's why we do this, and I know that's why you listen. I sure appreciate all of the comments that you've given me over the recent weeks. We have some great interviews lined up for the next few weeks. And so without further ado, we're going to roll. Tonight we have a chef that received 2010 Best New Chef for Food and Wine magazine. He happens to reside kind of in the middle of nowhere in Virginia, but people travel from all over as a destination to go to his restaurant, which is a testimony to him and his wife and what they've produced there. And this is, this is a pretty cool thing. And I think, as Virginians, we're proud to have him in the state. We have Chef John B. Shields from the townhouse in Chilhowee, Virginia. And John, how you doing, man?
I'm doing well. How about yourself this evening?
I'm doing great. I had a great day, and I'm happy to be talking to you. I have not made it to your restaurant yet, but I've checked out your blog and your website quite a few times, and some of the different chefs and food people up here were talking about making a trip down to see you.
Well, that sounds great. Yeah. Come on down. We're as I always say, we're here. We're working all the time, and even when I'm not here, we're still doing something involved with the restaurant, whether it be working in our farm or foraging,
yeah, sure,
or creating new relationships with people and the growers out here. So it's pretty much a constant evolution down here.
Yeah. Let me ask you first, where exactly is Chilhowee, Virginia?
Well, don't try to look for it on a map, because you won't find it. it's right on the tip of Virginia, about 30 miles from Tennessee.
Wow.
It's a pretty southern area, something I'm definitely wasn't really accustomed to not growing up in this area. I really even been to an area this rural before, but it's just here we are.
That's awesome. Well, let me ask you, what in Chilhowee? Why did people actually live in Chilhowee?
I think all the people who live here would be the locals, the people that grew up here.
Sure.
I think we're probably the only people that ever moved here. in a bad way, but it's not for everybody. I mean, it's
sure,
a very slow pace of life, and I'm a pretty fast-paced guy, and the reason we came here obviously was for one reason only, was to come here and to create our craft and to do what we do. And we met people that were into food as much as we were, and they wanted to take a spot and create something out of nothing, and
sure,
it just sounded pretty awesome. I mean, it was something totally new. Nobody was doing it. We just got back from Europe and traveling to different places that were kind of in the middle of nowhere, and so we said, hey, I know it hasn't worked here so far really in America so much, but let's give it a go and see what happens.
Well, let me ask you, how did you pick Chilhowee? Did you just close your eyes, stick your hand on a map?
Well, I was at the point where, I'd worked in some pretty good places and had a good opportunity out in Vegas. And the more we got closer time to get, to get things going and rolling, I just decided that, Vegas wasn't the spot for me. And
sure,
and I wanted to try something else. And, there's not too many people out there that are willing to take you in and invest in you and to mm-hmm. do what you want. And for me, it was, it's all about the cuisine. So,
sure,
it really didn't matter where it was. I would have moved anywhere, really, for somebody to back what we were doing and allow me to, to progress. And it's been the best decision I've ever made. So,
yeah, it's pretty incredible, actually.
Craziest decision I ever made, but one of the best ones.
It takes a lot of guts, to do something like that. So I applaud you. I applaud you there. tell me a little bit about the places that you've worked coming up to the townhouse.
Sure, sure. I guess the most significant places I worked, I got started in St. Louis, and I ended up working in some really good places right off the bat without even really realizing it. I was going to culinary school, mm-hmm. but you know, I had really no idea what made a good restaurant, and just kind of lucked out and got a good start with a lot of chefs there that were really dedicated, and so it really helped catapult me a little bit, and so I moved back to Florida to save money to go up to CIA, because
sure.
the school I was at in St. Louis, I thought it was a good school, but I thought, for my resume, I thought it was better if I had a Johnson & Wales or a CIA
right.
or Cordon Bleu or something, mm-hmm. other than the campus I was at. So I ended up working at this restaurant in Florida called the Grand Finale, and mm-hmm. It was basically the place that offered me the most money, and that was
right.
the point
right.
that I took the job, and anyway, long story short, after 8 months, the owner came to me asking if I wanted to take over because he wasn't happy with the chef, and so I said, sure, really having no idea how to get it going, and I was coming in at 4 o'clock in the afternoon, coming in and doing my work till 11, and I was done, so I had to figure out how am I actually going to create food that I want to do and make it happen. I just, obviously right then and there I realized I got to start coming in at 8 o'clock in the morning every day. So,
yeah, true.
So this is, I think I was 21 at the time, just turned 21. And, here I am, making a great salary and all of a sudden, and, I've got a kitchen that's my own and an owner that's willing to let me do what I want to do. And, after three years, we were actually named, best restaurant in Tampa Bay. And, so it was a great start. And I knew from there, I was like, well, I really want to go see, if I have what it takes to, cook in a big city.
Sure.
I was heading for New York or Chicago, and actually had landed a job in New York, and I was all ready to go to New York. And then all of a sudden I got a call from Charlie Trotters asking if I wanted to go there and stage and try out basically.
Yeah. Right.
I went there and that was it. And it was like all of a sudden I was going to New York, and the next thing I know,
you're in Chicago.
My whole mindset was like, I'm going to New York City. And then the next thing I know, I was like, no, I guess I'm going to Chicago. Cause really Charlie's was for me personally, the guy that really, set the tone, set the bar mm-hmm. higher than any American chef had, at least, changing the way that we thought about food.
Sure.
And in that time period. And, I was just really inspired by that. And then I ended up working there. So,
that's awesome.
Really, was one of the hardest things I've ever done ever. So,
how long did you work at Charlie Trotters? How long did you work there?
A little over 2 years. And, so I was sous chef by the time I left, and then I left and went to Alinea.
Sure.
And then I'm skipping ahead real quick, but that was the Vegas job. Actually, he actually scouted me back from Alinea. To open up his Vegas restaurant as the chef there. And so I went back there, against all my good judgment, and I went back with him just because, I thought it was a great opportunity to have the reins in a city like Las Vegas, and the money was incredible, and I just thought it was a great opportunity. I couldn't really pass it up, and Grant pretty much told me the same thing that I said, chef, I'll do whatever you think I should do. And he was like, you'd be stupid not to take this because, actually, no, he didn't tell me that. The owner, Nick DeHonis, told Grant to tell me that. But, anyway.
Go ahead.
Well, I was going to say, so then I spent my time at Charlie's and then I spent 2 years, at, Alinea starting as Tornat and then, pretty quick to sous chef.
Sure.
And, I had my sights set on Chef Cuisine, which was in the cards for me. And Chef Cuisine, Curtis Duffy, was leaving. And so I was touted to take over. And then the whole Vegas thing happened, which, it was a blessing in disguise, really. You know what I mean? So it got me out of, really got me out of Charlie's. And it got me out of Alinea. And kind of put me out there to go make it happen, really. And so and that's what I've done.
That's awesome. I know... talking with a lot of the young chefs and everything, of course, Grant and Alinea is, in his book and everything that came out is, kind of took over from where I think that, you know, Thomas Keller's French Laundry book, how influential that was for young chefs and Alenia. You know, his book is beautiful, and it really, you know, really is pretty organized and sets a good plan for a lot of young chefs. And
definitely,
was that kitchen really that organized?
Oh, beyond. Yeah. I mean, that was every day. I mean, I was literally, you know, Martin Kastner, who creates the service pieces at the restaurant.
Sure.
That's his wife, Laura Kastner, who did all the photography for the book.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I mean, that was like, you know, when you pull out the spice drawer and you pull it out and all the labels are going the same way and they're all perfect. And that was her just pulling it open, taking a shot and putting it back. You know what I mean? That's the way it was there. That's the way it was at the French Laundry. That's the way it was at Trio, because I used to go to Trio when Grant was at Trio.
Yeah.
While I was at Charlie's as well. So,
mm-hmm.
you know, for me, it was like going to Alenia was like the best of both worlds in a sense. You know, I got a dose of the French Laundry because I did apply.
Sure.
I did apply to the French Laundry and didn't have any response. And so for me, it was like, well, I get, you know, the discipline, the drive, you know, the focus of the French Laundry. And
right.
And then, you know, then the new, you know, kind of a newer way of thinking about food. And so it was kind of it was perfect, really.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. You know, and I think there's so many opportunities now for young chefs comparative to back in the day when I was a kid. I mean, we didn't have staging and things like that, and we didn't have some of the chefs we have now. I remember when I was a kid, people would say, "Oh, you're going to be a chef. You want to be a French chef, don't you?" And I'd say, "No, I want to be an American chef." They're like, "Yeah, whatever." And
exactly.
And now, you know, because this is my 40th year in the kitchen.
Yeah.
And I got to tell you, and I spent a month in Italy this year. My son lives in Mestrino, right beside the town that La Calandre is in. And the normal restaurants, you know, what I call a regular fine dining restaurant in Italy, compared to the fine dining restaurants in America, I'll stand by us. You know, I'll stand by what we're doing here. And there's a few restaurants that are unbelievable, but most of the city's best restaurants, they couldn't stand up. And I don't want to step on anybody's toes, but I think that there are so many people and so many good opportunities right now in America that the chefs are doing phenomenal work, and it's very exciting. And you know, in particular, I wanted to ask you, what is a broken marshmallow?
Well, actually, it's quite simple, really. Well, we decided to take the most simple idea of a marshmallow, which is just vanilla bean. So it's a vanilla bean marshmallow, and then we take liquid nitrogen and we drop like a big piece of the marshmallow in there and wait for it to turn rock hard. And once we do that, we just shatter it, basically.
Nice.
And it breaks up into these really abstract kind of rock-looking pieces, which is something you can't do, you know, with a marshmallow because the sugar content is so high in it,
right?
Unless you have nitrogen. So it's just, you know, and then we kind of scatter it about the plate, and it's just an organic kind of way to present a marshmallow. And, yeah, most people don't really have marshmallow for dessert. I mean, you don't.
Yeah,
you know, you might have a marshmallow as a petit four or something like that, but you know, you don't really ever have that as a focus part of the dish. And so we said, you know, how can we take that to and actually make it into dessert that's palatable and not too sweet? And so,
right.
We do it with cucumber ice, which we call it an ice.
Mm-hmm.
I guess it's a sorbet per se, but we make it more kind of slushy and season it with a good amount of lemon, and then we actually take sorrel leaves, you know, kind of sour leaves, drop that in nitrogen as well, and then pick that up and shatter that over the top as well. So then you have this really nice contrast of sour cucumber and sweet marshmallow, and so it's a great combination. And so what happens as it sits on the plate, you know, we allow it to slightly temper, so you get like just the slightest crunch on the outside, but just the slightest, and then it's, you know, pretty soft on the inside. So it's pretty cool.
Yeah, we'll be down. We'll be down.
Oh, good.
I
good. Yeah, I mean, that's kind of like, and I'll just interject real quick. I mean,
sure.
It's kind of like the philosophy of what we do here. I mean, what we did at Alinea was amazing, and I had an amazing time there, and Grant and I are still very close, and you know, the way he pushes and thinks about food is groundbreaking. Uh-huh. But for us, I mean, we had to carve our own identity, and that was like one of the first things I wanted to do when we got here was, you know, yes, I may be using some of the techniques per se, or the ideas in a sense of pushing food forward, sure. But we wanted to really embrace the area in a sense, and I think after the first year, that was the kind of the focus. You know, the first year was kind of like, okay, well, you know, who are we as chefs? What are we doing here? And the mm-hmm. food was very kind of like, Charlie's Alinea, back and forth. And then right. after the first year, it became much more about the environment and where we were and what was available and really just focusing on that. And I made a real conscious effort to say, you know what, you know, even though some of these techniques are great and, you know, from Mel Bouilly, and that they're amazing and that's great, but I'm going to leave that to LBE, and we're going to think forward. You know, we're going to move past that. And so for us, you know, an idea like dropping marshmallows into a liquid nitrogen is not, you know, groundbreaking.
Sure.
But what it is, it's interesting, it's new, it's a different texture, and it's delicious. And that's our focus. You know what I mean? That's what we wanted to focus on was the natural environment out here, delicious food done in a, you know, a very kind of modern, forward-thinking way.
Yeah.
You know?
Hey, do you have a Robert's Oxygen down there, or you have a place to get the liquid nitrogen, or do you have to drive somewhere?
No. Actually, the owners of the restaurant have a scrap metal yard, and so they make a good amount of money off of that. And anyway, they have tanks of oxygen and different things over there, and so it comes to them regularly. It's pretty close to the restaurant, so they just drop off a couple of tanks on their way out.
Yeah,
there you go. My back door every week.
Yeah, that's awesome. I mean, look, I became a chef on the Outer Banks of North Carolina in 1985. I opened the Sanderling Inn, and to get produce, I had to get a fella in Washington D.C. to buy my produce at the market, wrap it in plastic, the boxes, and put them on a Greyhound bus, and I had to meet it at the Exxon station. You know, if I wanted to get morels or if I wanted to get any really heirlooms, because down there it was nothing but like a broadline place, like a Cisco type place with produce. It was horrible. And and so, you know, I think of you out in Chilhowee, I'm thinking, man, where's he getting liquid nitrogen? But, you know, there are.
Right. How do you get it? Yeah. Well, I mean, I guess times have changed in a sense, but at the same time, it's still not that easy to get stuff out here. I mean, you know, I rely on, you know, the local produce here as much as possible. You know, we do work with some farms in Ohio, but we try to stay as local as possible. But I mean, yeah, interjecting back to what you said earlier about how different it was and Charlie kind of coming in and changing things the way they were. You know, really, I mean, for me, I've seen a tremendous change in just the 10 years, 12 years I've been cooking,
sure.
You know what I mean? Because, I mean, really, when I started cooking, you know, the internet was just kind of a new thing, you know what
right.
I mean? And it was still, you know, not everybody was really into it or checking their email 25 times a day or,
sure.
You know, Facebook wasn't anybody's imagination. And, you know, there was a couple handful of cookbooks out that were, like, really, really inspiring. And there was a handful of restaurants that were really, really inspiring for, say, a chef that wanted to go do four-star food. And now it's like, forget about it.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's the internet kind of blew the lid off of everything, and I think in a sense that's why there is so many restaurants now. You know what I mean? It made it easier for chefs to get information. They didn't have to go work at a Pages, or they didn't have to go to Garnier, they didn't have to go
sure.
You know, to Spain, or you know, they could just go online and they could go work at, you know, a couple of good places, and then they could go open up and do some pretty good food, and it's just it's a totally different animal now, and it really. It's been a big leap, you know, in a very short period of time.
Well, I'll tell you what I was worried about. I was worried that all these young chefs would be really into molecular cuisine, but just making things out of a cookbook without experiencing it, because poor molecular cuisine can be like the worst thing in the world. And so I was really worried that all these people would just try to open these restaurants. But you know what? It really hasn't happened that way. People who don't know it are kind of staying away from it because they're scared. So it's kind of neat, you know, people that are doing it or seem to be doing it well, you know?
Well, you know what? I think it's really a handful of people that can do it well. Because really, you know, to really do it well, it takes a real understanding of food, and that's the reason that you know Heston Blumenthal or Ferran Andrea can create the things that they create, or Andoni at Mugar Eats, you know.
Yeah.
These guys have been through the gamut. They've worked at places that, you know, they know classical cuisine. They know how to turn an artichoke perfectly, or to create you know the most amazing you know souffles. Or I mean, they're technically sound at what they do, and that allows them to now leave that and find out what they don't know how to do. And that's
true.
What Fran talks about. And
yeah.
And that's the thing is that you know some of the young chefs, you know, it's like you know, well, they don't know how to do the you know the spheres or this or that, and they want to learn how to do it. And they don't even know how to really break down a piece of fish correctly.
It's true, that's what I was worried about, that they just would not get a foundation, you know, before they started these things. And then, you know, they would have made bad food anyway. So, So who was, you know, so you worked for some great people. What would you say the one person that you worked for that really kind of helped mold you?
Well, I'd say Grant. I mean, of all the chefs I've worked for, it's definitely Grant and the chef de cuisine at Charlie's, Matthias Mertes, who's actually just getting ready to open up his own place in Chicago, were two of the closest people I know as far as molded me as a chef, you know, technically. And but I'd say Grant went a step further as he, you know, I became very close to him in a sense, and he's been a mentor towards me, and so yeah, without a doubt, it's Grant, and you know, it's amazing to see what he does, and what he's gone through, and
Yeah,
he's just a big inspiration. So,
how's he doing, by the way? You know, health wise and everything.
As far as I know, he's doing great. You know, but you know, Grant's he's very proud, he's very determined, and you know, if he wasn't doing well, I don't think he would tell me until, you know, it was, like, too late. You know what I mean?
Yeah, sure.
He's kind of that guy. He's a fighter. And, you know, even though we're close, you know, I don't see him that often. So, you know, I think he'd probably tell me he's doing fine. And for what I hear, when I hear from everybody, you know, the cancer's in remission and he's doing good and life is great. So
yeah.
I just hope it stays that way.
Yeah, well, I got to tell you, I was in Florence and I went to Villa San Michele, which was, you know, rated the highest food for Europe through Condé Nast, and it's a sister hotel of Keswick. And I stopped there, and there was a man in the lobby, and I was talking with the maitre d', and then he stopped me, and he said, oh, you know, you're Chef Hartman. He said, I ate at Keswick and everything, and it was great. And he said, you know, I'm headed to Venice. Where should I eat? And we talked for a little while, and I was, you know, trying to give him some pointers. And he said, well, is there anything like Alinea? Is there anything like Alinea in? So I sent him to the, you know, like Calandre, which is really fantastic. But, you know, people are talking about, I'm over in Florence, you know, and people are talking about Grant's restaurant. So, and, you know, what's cool about your restaurant is, you know, the people who actually kind of blew the whistle on your place being open were not really from Virginia, you know. They're from like New York City and other places. So that's got to make you feel good. But I'm thinking as a chef, and I opened several places, you know, how do you open a place in Chilhowee and then all of a sudden, you know, you have just the locals on the first couple weeks that you're open, first months, the first year. How did they receive your food, and did you do some certain things to kind of win the locals over first before you start doing your thing? You just say, nope, we're doing our thing. I'm not saying the locals are dumb. That's not what I mean.
What's that?
I'm not trying to put the locals down in a sense, what I'm saying. I mean, you have to cook for people, first of all, if they're going to come back.
You do. Well, I think originally the owners of the restaurant thought that, you know, the food tastes delicious in general, and that they would be accepting of it. And I was skeptical in the beginning, and thought that was, you know, I just wasn't sure how that was going to work. But they, you know, they were convinced, and they convinced us. And so we said, okay, well, we're going to come in here and do our thing. And I'd say in the beginning, you know, we probably went faster than they wanted to go in the beginning, the owners, but after a short period of time, we went even faster, I'd say, and kind of rocked the boat.
Sure.
And just really said, you know, this is the focus. This is what we came here to do. And, you know, I'm not trying to step on anybody's toes. I'm not trying to disrespect anybody. And, you know, the food before was good. It was a good restaurant. You know, they had good steaks and they had good crab cakes and the people liked it. And for this area, I mean, it was really great. I mean, it was
sure.
more wholesome food than what, you know, a lot of places around here even have. So, you know, and in that respect, you know, I felt a little guilty, but at the same time, you know, this is what we're here to do. And,
mm-hmm.
But you know, to answer your question, I mean, no, I mean, we got busy right off the bat. Everyone wanted to see what we were doing, and then we got really slow.
Yeah.
And nobody wanted to come. And this is a restaurant that was doing like 100 covers on a Friday, Saturday. So, you know, to start doing, 20, you know, all of a sudden it was like, whoa, you know what I mean? It was a kind of a wake up call. And we were also
sure.
doing lunch at the time as well, which was
uh-huh.
extremely difficult for us to try to manage doing lunch and then, you know, do the food that we wanted to do to create, you know,
right.
it takes all days
mm-hmm.
to make it. And it takes all week, you know what I mean? You know, for some
right.
dishes, I mean, so, you know, it was very difficult in the beginning but you know, we knew it would be. So, I would say that, the way they responded was, we were not the place they wanted to come. And you know, it came down to, you know, just not knowing, you know, I mean, it was, you know, not their fault. It's not really my fault. It's you know, this is what we wanted to do, but they just, you know, it's just something they've never experienced before. And, you know, really a lot of people haven't experienced, even in people in big cities, you know,
right,
haven't
yeah.
really experienced some of the food that we do here. So, you know, people are scared of what they don't know. And, you know, it was tough in the beginning. So
yeah.
it took a while. And after a while, you know, we kind of, started to bounce back, and then people started to you know, started to come again. And yeah, we're definitely not feeding the locals, that's for sure. I mean, we're
yeah.
definitely catering to you know, people on the outskirts of the area we're in, and all over the country at this point. So
right. Well, that's awesome. I think you know, it takes a lot of guts to do something like that, and it takes a you know, kind of an operating partner, an owner who's putting the money into something to be able to, you know, see that happen and stick with stay the course, you know. So I'm happy that happened. And I'm sure you're happy that happened too. So so let me ask you, how are things going down there now?
Well, things are good, definitely. You know, I mean, the restaurant's doing well. It's you know, we could definitely be a little busier on Tuesdays and Wednesdays, that's
sure.
for sure. But you know, I mean, other than that, I mean, things are good. You know, we're moving forward with some ideas. We kind of postponed some ideas a little bit too, because the beginning of the year when we started back up, it did start off a little slower than we anticipated.
Mm-hmm.
Last year, after, you know, Food and Wine came out, I mean, it was just kind of like we blew up. I mean,
sure.
you know, we kind of blew up actually the year before when we were in the New York Times and they did a pretty huge article on us. And but then after Food and Wine, it was, you know, it was just pretty much every day running, you know, to make it happen because, you know, the restaurant was just buzzing. So, and that was great. And that went all the way until, the new year. I mean, we closed down from, you know, our normal, we closed down for 1 month, January, just because it's just,
sure.
you know, so, the weather's terrible, people don't travel. And so we said, you know, hey, let's just close down and take a nice breather. So,
yeah.
But when we came back, we expected it to kind of be the same way, and unfortunately, it just you know, it didn't. It wasn't exactly what we thought it was going to be. So we kind of postponed some plans of, you know, expanding and I don't mean restaurant wise, but expanding the inn, and because you know, we have a sister property that we have lodging.
Sure.
So we're trying to maybe expand that and move the restaurant down there, really kind of build the restaurant that I envisioned and. And then maybe even turn this restaurant into a more casual barbecue type place or
sure.
something that, you know, we didn't know. You know, I mean, I had some ideas, but something that would appeal to the locals again, something we can pack the place in and then go over to, you know, to the Riverstead property and do, you know, 25 guests a night and really, you know, blow the
yeah,
socks
sure.
off. So, you know, unfortunately, those plans have been kind of sidetracked so far, and, you know, now we're kind of just forgot what we're going to do next year. We're not sure yet.
Yeah. Yeah, but of course you're going to keep cooking, so you know that part, right?
You're going to
be
that part.
You're going to be there every day.
We're cooking away right now.
Yeah, so sure.
Right now we're knee deep in trying to figure out the fall menu. So.
So now, do you guys have any children or anything?
I do. I do have a daughter actually. She's about 4 months old right now. So I'm a new father. So it's throwing a big it's throwing a big curveball in my life. And I wouldn't say in a curveball. I mean,
sure,
don't make
sure.
it sound bad, but I mean, in the way of, you know, I'm just learning how to redo things a little bit.
Yeah, absolutely.
Manage my time and be a good father at the same time.
Yeah, that's it's one of those things as a chef to, you know, be able to handle everything. You know, your wife's a pastry chef. She understands probably more than some others. So.
Well, actually, I mean, right now, that's kind of the roles that have changed a little bit. You know, it's she's actually spending a majority of her time at home now, and
sure.
I'm actually I'm you know chef here slash pastry chef.
Yeah.
So but what we did was actually bought a really nice oven for the house, and she's actually doing a lot of work at the house, bringing stuff. You know, because we have the inn, which we do some goods for at the end, and she'll do some things there, and then she'll come in about a couple times a week and maybe make, you know, she'll basically come in like a bat out of hell and just, you know, throw down and then she leaves. And so basically the day-to-day though, and service wise, I'm pretty much running right now. So
yeah, well, I gotta tell you, I had kids pretty early, so I always had these, you know, children and my wife, and I was working 100 hours a week, so I understand. Yeah. You know what mm-hmm. what people go through, and it's really hard. But you know, I'm still married after 35 years. So I'm
well, there. You go. You made it work.
I'm thankful. But I tell you what, it wasn't easy sometimes for her. It wasn't easy sometimes for me. But you know, when you have the passion. Speaking of the passion, what do you think? You know, I always wonder, you know, about chefs, because there's some chefs that just seem to have in something innate. You know, that they can look at ingredients and think a certain way to bring them onto the plate and into the restaurant in a way that's, you know, just really gives it a lot of respect. And then there's others that just don't seem to have it. Do you think it's something that comes from like childhood, or do you think it's something that's just in someone's genes or in their DNA, or what do you think about that?
That's a kind of a touchy thing. I don't want to step anybody's toes, you know,
well,
you know, I think for me,
you don't have to name names.
You know, for me, it's you know, I didn't start cooking until late. You know, now guys are cooking very early in life, and
there's
you know, there's so many cooking shows out now. When I was coming up, it was like, you know, Emeril Lagasse was just coming out. I mean, you know,
yeah.
You're starting to watch the Food Network, and you know, it was all, you know, being a chef was just like, you know, whatever. Nobody cared or knew, or
yeah,
you know,
sure.
And it started becoming more popular. And so, I, you know, for me even personally, I was just like, I went to culinary school kind of like, I was into it, but I wasn't like into it. And,
right.
But then I quickly realized that, you know, that I kind of had a knack at it, and the chefs kind of saw something in me, and then I kind of went from there. And, but I think, you know, for me personally, I mean, it's definitely, you know, you either have it or you don't have it. It's one of those things. I mean, you can definitely learn. There's lots of kids, you know, young chefs that are, you know, good cooks, and they can run a line, and
sure.
But there's, you know, there's a handful out there that are really, you know, great chefs, and that the ones that are great chefs are ones that are just born with, you know, a real sense about them,
mm-hmm.
about everything. You know, they have a real awareness about them,
right?
And that awareness allows them to be able to run a restaurant, run a pastry station, to come up with ideas and be creative, and then have that touch, you know, that feel.
Right.
Cooking, you know what I mean? It's you have to have right. that feel. I mean, you have to, you know, if you're stirring a pot, you know, with rice of risotto, and you know, I can feel it on my arm. It literally,
right.
you know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
If I can feel it through the wooden spoon on my arm, I can tell when the rice is done. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And it comes with experience, obviously, but it also comes with, you know, just a natural feeling that I have, and I really connect with food. So.
Yeah. Now, your ideas. I know you've come up with some beautiful stuff, and do you get those sometimes from your staff, or do you dream about food? Where's the best place for you to just just feel and have ideas flow.
Well, really, you know, it's just kind of a culmination of things. You know, it's my experience. It's reading books. It's traveling, eating, tasting. It's like the biggest thing. It's like eating. You know, what does it taste like? What does that taste like? What's that? How does that go together? I learned from this person. I learned from that person. I learned from myself. I learned from other chefs. You know, just like I said, that kind of awareness and openness to learn. And, you know, all great chefs do it. I mean, Ferran Adrià has the most innovative chef in the last 100 years.
Yeah,
and
sure.
And Rodin is probably the most important chef of the last 100 years. You know, I say that, you know, maybe might not agree with me, but I'm saying you can't agree with that. And, you know, but I mean, he travels the world.
Yeah,
he travels
true.
The entire world. He's traveled the whole world and eaten everywhere. And he has 50 stages a year that come in that have worked at some amazing places that come in and put their knowledge to work. I mean, he literally handpicks people that are from Korea, that are from different parts of the world, so they can come in and bring their knowledge to the restaurant to make it, what it is. And he talks about, you know, what makes him so great is the fact that, you know, he has the best team.
Right.
And, you know, lots of people are, you know, the thing is like you can be, the idea to be creative is one thing. Lots of people can be creative or they can have creative ideas, but the ability to actually, to be creative, the actual sure. ability, the act of creativity is something all, is totally different. And not everybody has that. And that was a quote that I read a few recently, and that really, you know, kind of nailed down for me in a sense is that, you know, I know everybody I know I work with has creative ideas, but there's very few that have a lot of creative ideas and the knack to actually put it into action and then put it on the plate and have the guests go, wow, it's amazing. You know what I mean? And
true enough.
That's where I say that, not, you know, you kind of have to have that or you don't have it.
Mm-hmm. Do you ever feel like it's a gift?
Well,
I mean, look, I'm not saying, John, do you think you're a gifted human being? But
yeah, I wouldn't say I'm gifted. I'd say I'm lucky. I'd say that, you know, I definitely have a knack for it. You know, how good I'm going to become or what, you know, who
yeah,
knows?
Sure.
But, you know, right now I think we do pretty good food.
Yeah, well, you're definitely getting the attention. And from what I hear, it's great. Who, did you eat a lot as a kid? I mean, did your family cook some cool
that's
stuff?
The thing. No, I mean, I was like kind of I wouldn't say I was the all-American kid in the sense. I mean, my mom, you know, growing up really tried to have me eat, you know, healthier food and you know, not drink sodas and this and that. And she pretty much, you know, put that to good use, you know. And we had dinner. It was like, you know, roasted chicken and vegetables and, you know, the potatoes were cooked with the chicken and they had the fat all over them. And then, you know, it was wholesome food and, you know, I didn't get fast food and, you know, but then when I got to be a teenager, and I was just kind of like, you know, I can do whatever the hell I want now. I was just like, fuck it. You know,
sure.
I'm going to go eat at McDonald's. I'm going to go eat here. And, you know, but I didn't know any better. You know, I mean, it was kind of like, you know, I guess I was rebelling in a sense.
Right.
I don't know if that makes any sense or not. But, you know, so I went that little process in my life. And, you know, but once I got into food, you know, in my early 20s and started cooking. Well, then I started to realize that, you know, that I wanted to eat more wholesome and that, you know, what I put in my body is, you know, you are what you eat. That's what
yeah,
I say.
Sure.
And I try to eat better. That's for sure.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's awesome. That's awesome. Well, if you could say anything about, yourself and what you think, young people or anybody who wants to get in the business, what they should think about. Can you just give me a few thoughts on that?
Well, one thing I would say was, you know, first and foremost is you got to fucking pay your dues, man.
Mm-hmm.
You got to pay your dues. You got to work in places that are going to kick your ass, and you can't just go stage at places. You can't just go and spend a month here and then a week there and then work at a halfway decent restaurant and go, and then all of a sudden 3 years, 4 years later, you want to go open your own place. I mean, you can do that. And that's fine. You'll do good food, but you're never going to reach a certain point. You're only going to go so high. But like people that really, you know, and I think in the generation before me and in my generation coming up were, you know, there wasn't that many places to go work. You know, you had to go, it was like the French Laundry, it was Le Bernardin, it was Danielle, sure. or you went overseas, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, or Charlie Trotter's. It was like, you know, there was very few places, you know, that were that four-star, I guess. And not everybody wants to do four-star food, and that's fine. I, 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 And I totally respect that. And and I love that. I love that style of food. I love eating that. You know, I don't love eating broken marshmallows every day, that's for sure. But, you know, you really have to hunker down and focus. And like I said, it just all depends on where you want to take your career.
Sure.
Where do you want to go? I mean, how dedicated are you to becoming the best chef? If you're not, accept it. Live with it and just be who you are. You know what I mean?
Don't try to
be something you're not. Don't try to say, oh, that's cool and be that kind of chef. You know, you either are or you aren't. And if you feel it in your heart and you're like, man, this is who I am. I'm a creative guy. I like to be creative. I want to do the style of food. Well, then you go for it.
Yeah,
but if you're
true.
Like, well, you know, I just want to learn some techniques, then yeah, okay, fine. Go stash somewhere else, but then go work at a place that you think that you're going to go. If you want to be, you know, eventually I want to end up doing, you know, an amazing barbecue, or I want to go do an amazing charcuterie, or I just want to do an amazing bistro, just doing the best French food ever. Well, then go work at the best place ever and go work there and spend time there and do it day in and day out for years, not
yeah,
just
true.
A little while. You got to, like, you have to hone your skill, to hone the way you think and run a kitchen takes time. And, you know, people want to jump the gun to be a celebrity chef before they even know how to, you know.
Right.
To do a lot of things right, and I could go down the list. But,
some of them do become celebrity chefs before they do anything.
They do. There's a lot of them out there right now.
Yeah.
And, you know, hey, more power to them. I mean, they're probably making more money than I am, and they're doing great, and they're happy with life, and, you know, hey, that's great. But,
yeah,
you know, I'd say to the people that are, you know, the people that are all about the food, you know, like their focus is, I want to be amazing. I want to be the greatest. I want to be as amazing as I could possibly be, then I say to them, then you got to pay your dues.
Yeah,
true. You got to pay your dues. You got to work your ass off. You got to get your ass kicked. You got to, like, get your ass kicked to the ground. I mean, like scrubbing pipes all day long and, like, you know, copper pot, you know, pipes in there until 4 in the morning, you know, and saying to yourself, what the hell am I doing in this place? Why would I ever do this? You know, but it's almost like the Army. And you come out and, you know, your skin is tough and you can handle more things than you could ever imagine.
True enough.
Can take on a load of responsibilities that you could never even imagine before. So,
well, that's great advice. And look, I've enjoyed talking to you tonight. I think the folks out there are going to, you know, get a lot out of your words and our conversation.
Well, good.
And, again, I look forward to coming to eat there. And I also, I appreciate what you're doing and some of the things that I've seen that you do, you know, just in reading about them and seeing some of the photos have been inspiring to me. And the fact that you're here in Virginia, that's cool. So we're happy to have you. And, John, thanks again.
Well, thank you. I appreciate it. And I had a great time. So hopefully I'll talk to you soon.
You will. And folks, you've been listening to Chew the Fat with Chef Craig Hartman. You can find us on chewfat.net and also seavillepodcast.com, as well as many other fantastic podcasts. Remember to give us feedback. If you know any chefs or anybody that you think we should interview, let me know. Again, thanks for listening to Chew the Fat.
That was always just the name of this song. And I guess that, well, that's probably why I still call this song Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. You can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. Walk right in, it's around the back, just a half a mile from the railroad track. And you can get anything you want at Alice's Restaurant. I wasn't gonna sing the song tonight, or this decade, but I realized sometime earlier this year that it had been 26 years since this come out as a movie, and it was 2 years before that that it came out as a record. And it was 2 years ago on the record, which means it was like 30 Thanksgivings ago. 30 years ago on Thanksgiving, when my friend and I decided to go up and visit Alice at the restaurant. But Alice didn't used to live in a restaurant. She used to live in the church nearby the restaurant, in the bell tower. with her husband Ray and Fatcha the dog, and living in the bell tower like that, they used to have a lot of room downstairs where the pews used to be. Seeing as how they took out all of the pews and having all that room, they decided that they didn't have to take out their garbage for a long time. We got up there, found the place was filled with garbage, and we decided it'd be a friendly gesture for us to take the garbage down to the town dump. So we took the half a ton of garbage, put it in the back of a red VW microbus, took shovels and rakes and implements of destruction and headed on toward the town dump. We got there, and there was a sign, a chain across the road, and the sign said, "Closed on Thanksgiving." We had never heard of a dump closed on Thanksgiving before. And so with tears in our eyes, we drove off into the sunset, looking for another place to put the garbage. We didn't find one, till we come to a side road. And off of the side of the side road, there was a 15-foot cliff. And at the bottom of the cliff, there was another pile of garbage. We decided that one big pile would be better than two little ones, and rather than bring that one up, we decided to throw ours down. That's what we did. Drove back to the church, had a Thanksgiving dinner that couldn't be beat. Went to sleep and didn't get up until the next morning, when we got a phone call from Officer Obie. He said, "Kid, we found your name on an envelope at the bottom of a half a ton of garbage. Just wanted to know if you had any information about it." And I said, "Yes, sir, Officer Obie. I cannot tell a lie. I put it."